It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Fade the Chalk Live is back, and Adam and I are going to be diving into, on today's episode, Week 2 pickups off of the waiver wire. Adam, what's going on, man? There was a ton of crazy action. Like, did you watch that Monday Night Football game?
Yeah, I was ready to go to bed because I kind of wanted to go to bed a little bit early. And then Justin Tucker hits that field goal. And I'm like, all right, odds are this game's probably over. And then I don't know if you heard of this receiver he plays for the Raiders. His name's Bryan Edwards. I don't know if you've heard about him.
Never heard of him. Who dat?
But no, it was a crazy game. Derek Carr got absolutely saved. Why are you hard counting at the 1 yard line? What are those?
With rookie linemen? Like, everybody's going to toast Leatherwood for that. But, like, really?
No.
Why?
Like, yeah, like, that was absurd. And they're lucky to have won that game. And then I know some people are saying that, like, I think it was a combination of Willie Snead should have absolutely caught the ball. But at the same time, like, Derek Carr, chill. Like, he threw, like, a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Like, it was just a crazy game. And then the fumble on the other end. Saw a lot of bad beats on the Lamar Jackson fumble in season long. So if that happened to you, or if it happened in your favor, just that we missed the late Monday night sweats, man. I wasn't part of any because my matchups were either on either side of the spectrum. They were in hand. So, but no, it was a fun week, man. It was a good reminder of how stressful it is on Sundays for me as well.
Oh man, the sweats were real. And then, I mean, between DFS and last night's game, I mean, I did not understand watching last night's game. Like, why? I get it. Darren Waller is fantastic. But when you're literally not looking at anybody else on the field, the defense knows what you're doing. The defense knows where the ball is going. And you saw the entire timeline. They're like, where's Bryan Edwards? And I'm like, he's out there. Just Carr isn't looking at him. And then towards the end of the game, it's like, where the hell has this been all game? Like, where? I know we're going to bring him up on waiver wires, but you're like, where was this? Where was this in the first half? Like,
also,
the guy was getting open at will.
Shout out to Josh Jacobs continuing to thrive off touchdowns and zero efficiency. I don't know how much longer this can go. And he almost got a third touchdown if they actually gave him the ball in that overtime. Yep. But look, we weren't high on Jacobs or the Raiders, but they I guess they kind of... they hurt us and got the win in week one.
So. Well, the other big takeaway there, too, is Jacobs looks like, I mean, can we say maybe he missed? I mean, I'm not going to say he misses some time this year, but that toe was acting up, man.
It
was like,
they didn't have him in at the end of the game other than short yardage. Like, when they were in between the 20s or whatever, it was Kenny and Drake, who I thought looked pretty good in this game. So, mm-hmm. Something to keep an eye on. I haven't seen anything post-game about it being an issue, but... it was definitely bothering him for sure.
I mean, you could tell every single time they come off with a play, like he's checking his foot, they were re-wrapping him, they were checking his shoes and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I'm going to be really curious to watch practice reports this week and see kind of where he's at, what that kind of looks like. Like, I won't be really surprised if he misses next week. It's funny because everybody was so worried about Antonio Gibson's toe going into this season. And now it's like, did we just not hear enough about Jacobs, like, you know, to have, like, the bells and whistles going off about him in the same regards? I mean, I don't know. As somebody who wasn't drafting a whole lot of Jacobs, maybe I just missed that news. But so on today's show, Adam and I are going to run through our top waiver wire pickups before week two, as well as people need to be hopping in the comments right now while we're live. We are going to go through a Q&A at the end of the episode discussing all of the top waiver wire pickups, helping you with your waiver wire pickups for your leagues. Before we get this kicked off, Adam, I know it was out on social media and I took the L versus our head honcho, Kevin Adams, over Top Prop Sports, man. All I got to say is I could do better. I could be better. I don't know what else to say. Like, I mean, I'm going to own the L there. He took it down, man. To add another layer of competition to your leagues, like we're discussing here, you got to be heading to Top Prop Sports right now. Get signed up with the promo code FTN. You can put money on these redraft matchups, import your leagues from ESPN or Yahoo. It's another way to add more competition, which is already like your home leagues, your family leagues. Get people to put money up. Get them to shut their mouth. Like, it's so much fun on a weekly basis. Adam, I'm looking at the outline here, man. We got about 8 to 10 players we're going to discuss, probably some other ones on the edge we're going to bring up here. Kick us off, man. Who's your first pickup for waiver wires?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you should start because we did it, like, we each, you know, chose, like, 4 players individually. So, I mean, we should just start with Elijah Mitchell, who you wrote down, obviously. Like, one of us was going to write him down. So, if you just want to start there, I mean, he's going to be the most added player. So if you want to just start there, I mean, I'm getting a lot of questions like how much fab would you spend in this situation? Like, I think it's like a 25% to 30%, but like Mostert's going to miss 8 weeks, which is awful. But like, what happened to San Francisco? Like, how did we not get any news in training camp about Brandon Ayuk's not exactly where we want him to be right now in his second season? Trey Sermon's behind Elijah Mitchell. And like, how did we not get that news?
They closed practices to the media, and apparently everything and all the things were happening over the last 10 or 14 days, which is crazy, but it's made it hard. Like, I've been in our Discord talking to our DFS subs and discussing, like, how hard it's been to get different practice reports, things, like, out of camp and rumors and where guys stand and stuff. And this is not a reflection on beat reporters who are doing a fantastic job. But teams around the league overall have been way more hush on this stuff this year. So week one, I mean, I was not expecting when we were live on the DFS show over at FTN Daily this weekend to see Trey Sermon be inactive. Like, that absolutely surprised me. So, like, yeah, I got Mitchell written down here, man. But, like, maybe I'm wrong. And this is not me trying to confirm priors here, but, like, maybe I'm wrong. Like, I'm not willing to break the bank for Elijah Mitchell, and I like him as a talent. Like, I've discussed him in Dynasty shows, articles across FTN Fantasy all offseason, but I don't think we know what this backfield's going to look like. I mean, like, Jermichael Hasty could be involved. Trey Sermon could be involved. Like, Elijah Mitchell going out there and smashing the Detroit Lions in the mouth, going over 100 yards. He split routes with Jermichael Hasty. He ran 10, Hasty ran 10. Kyle Juszczyk got in the action, ran 10 routes. And you look at the matchups on paper, like, for San Francisco over the next few weeks, Adam. They're not great, dude. Like, you got the Eagles, you got the Packers, you got Seattle, you got Arizona and Indy. 4 out of those 5 matchups are terrible. And I understand, like, yes, we like San Francisco. Yes, we think they can run the ball. But this is not a situation where I'm probably not going to end up getting Elijah Mitchell in a lot of different leagues because I think people are, like, talking like you're discussing here. We're talking about, like, I think it's 20 to 25% of your fab, no more than that. And I think people are going to be aggressive and they're going to pay more than that. But, I mean, am I wrong with any of this?
I mean, it's week one. It's not like a situation, like, obviously these players were drafted, so it's not the greatest example, but it's not like a situation where if Aaron Jones missed time and A.J. Dillon was available, like, you break the bank for A.J. Dillon. Sermon's still going to have a role. Like, he's not going to be a healthy scratch all year. He's probably going to play next week with Mostert out. Like, he's probably going to have to be active. And what happens if he starts to pick things up, as rookie running backs tend to do down the stretch in the second half of the season? So, yeah, Mitchell needs to be added. He handled 19 of the 22 running back carries in that game against Detroit. But again, like, I have it at like 25 to 30%, but I wouldn't go over that. And real quick, Ray GQ. The guy's amazing. Like,
he is. Elijah, he's awesome.
He's been on Elijah Mitchell for forever. Like, follow that man. He's a genius. And watch Wake Up with Ray GQ. Great stuff.
Yeah, man. I mean, he was all over Elijah Mitchell. I mean, we had Emory Hunt in the house. We talked about him as a prospect in the offseason, and we were all high on him. Athleticism, his rushing ability, especially in zone concepts, was good.
I think he can handle, he's got good enough size and he's got very good speed. I think he can handle, like, an every down workload. But it's also this backfield where we'll see. I mean, he handled all the carries essentially on Sunday, but that was with Sermon a healthy scratch and then Mostert leaving early. So they only had 2 running backs, and Hasty clearly was more of the passing downs running back. I know they split, but It'll be interesting, man. It'll be interesting to see how Sermon kind of progresses the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing is I just don't feel like in a lot of different instances, there are some players on this name, on this list, that I think that could you be more aggressive in what their projectable roles for the rest of the season kind of look like? I feel better about some of these names and players we're going to discuss here later over somebody like Elijah Mitchell. And I'm not saying he's a flash in the pan. I like the kid. I like his talent. I like the situation, obviously. I've been talking about Trey Sermon all offseason, but I just looking at matchups and all these different things and knowing how aggressively people are going to probably bid for him, considering he popped off. Yeah, man, like, my whole thing is I would much rather, tell me this, would you rather blow the fab clip like 35 and not even say 40% because maybe you don't have to go there, but let's say conservatively 30, 35% of your fab on Elijah Mitchell versus 5% for Jermichael Hasty? Which one would you rather do? For me, I'd rather take the bet on variance, or if somebody just like knee-jerk drops Trey Sermon.
That's what I was going to say.
You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather go with one of those options.
I would rather go after Mitchell for 25 to 30 than Hasty for 5, but I would also much rather make sure nobody drops Trey Sermon on Tuesday or Wednesday, because that would be an absolute mistake. That's something to keep an eye on, honestly.
We got a good comment from Twitter. I'm going to throw this up here. What about stashing Jeff Wilson? Another layer. If you got the IR position, yeah, I'm not against that. I think that if you're not handcuffed already with your IR position, considering other players that you might have, I'm definitely not against stashing Jeff Wilson. He could factor in. We've seen him have a role down the stretch. That comes down to like how deep your league is and how many IR spots you possibly have.
Yeah, and it might be tough to have available IR spots when we have Michael Gallup just landing on IR, and obviously the players that were are already ruled out for the season if you're in like dynasty leagues or whatever that you're placing on IR. So, but yeah, I mean, Mostert's going to miss 8 weeks. Like, Wilson should be back by then, so.
Yeah, I my whole thing is I just don't feel really good about like spending that amount of fab to get him, considering the rest of this backfield. But walk us into the next player, the first one on your list.
Yeah, it's not Elijah Moore, but Elliott should be pretty happy. It's Tim Patrick, who's 2% roster right now. Obviously, Jerry Jeudy suffers the high ankle sprain, which looked way worse at first. So he'll miss, it looks like, 4 to 6 weeks. Tim Patrick was already playing a ton. And Jeudy in that first game was about 75% slot. Six of his receptions came from the slot. So for me, it's going to be Sutton and Patrick on the outside, and KJ Hamler will mix in the slot. But their two receiver sets are going to be Patrick and Sutton. Patrick's been productive when he's been on the field. He scored last game. And if you're looking for somebody, like, say you lost Michael Gallup and Gallup was your wide receiver 3, or you don't feel great about one of your receivers, I would feel relatively confident starting Tim Patrick this week against Jacksonville, who allowed 10 different receivers to go for 100 yards last year. And I'm sitting here, I'm wondering, okay, they add Shaquille Griffin, CJ Henderson's second year, maybe they'll be better, and then they give up 130-plus to Brandon Cooks, and they let Tyrod Taylor and the Houston Texans offense go for 37 against them. So, yeah, I think Tim Patrick is like going to be like in that wide receiver 35 to 40 range for me this week when I do my rankings. And it's not just this week, obviously, because Jeudy's going to miss at least 4 to 6 weeks. We've seen high ankle sprains. Michael Thomas last year came back, wasn't quite 100%. It's a very difficult injury to come back from and be 100% right away. So even if he comes back in 4 to 5 weeks, he might not be fully Jerry Jeudy, especially someone who's so reliant on footwork and incredible route running like Jeudy has. Like, he's going to want to be 100% when he comes back. And I don't think Denver's going to rush him back. So he misses 6 weeks. 6 weeks, Tim Patrick is a productive player who you're going to have. And I think he's going to be a really viable wide receiver 3/flex going forward. And I think it starts this week in a fantastic matchup. So, yeah, give me Tim Patrick here.
So I'm going to add a name off the top here because my brain is percolating this morning. The caffeine's swirling. I'm slowly waking up more as we're doing
the monster's
show.
Kicking in.
Yeah, baby. And so we're talking about disrespected players. Tim Patrick has been so freaking good. A name I'm adding off the fly right now is Zach Pascal. We talked about him. If he's out there in your leagues, and this is one of the things that when I was walking the DFS game by game, I was like, look, we need to worry about and target the slot versus Seattle. And right process, wrong player, because the Colts flipped these roles. Paris Campbell, who was playing exclusively out of the slot last year, was not in the slot. Zach Pascal was starting in the slot, playing 80% of the snaps there. And you're talking about Tim Patrick, man. I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm like, Zach Pascal is a guy that over multiple seasons has been good. The slot usage for the Colts has been great over previous seasons. Pascal's a guy that's been top two in red zone targets on this team over the last two seasons. Like, if he's going to be the starting slot wide receiver, yes, that's a role that I want to gravitate to in fantasy, and I think he's going to be... I mean, we've seen the guy produce, Adam.
Did you see his first touchdown catch?
I missed it. I mean, I was too busy. I was glued to the Cardinals game, and I was flipping back and forth between that and watching Jalen Hurts just absolutely eviscerate people.
He looked so good, by the way.
He sure did.
But his first touchdown catch was, like, awesome. Like, it was, like, right at the one-yard line, like, right at the goal line, like, snagged it two-hand, like, in traffic. Like, he's good, man. I agree. Pascal, I thought about adding on this list as well. I would prefer Tim Patrick just because I think with the way the Colts offense ran when they targeted the running backs like 35% of the time, I think that could be a trend, especially after they paid Naheem Hines and how involved he was. So I think with Judy out, there's a better path for targets for Tim Patrick potentially, but not by like an insane amount. But yeah, like Pascal, definitely worth a look as well. He's good, man. Like these two players have always been productive when they get playing time. So they're now getting playing time due to injuries to the other receivers on their teams.
So I'm going to kick this back to you because we got an interesting question from Twitter. I want you to talk about Bryan Edwards, and then we're going to discuss this because we just got a question from Twitter, and I think it's really interesting, my friend. Bryan Edwards or Zach Pascal? So take me through the Bryan Edwards case. Let's discuss him for a second, and then we'll kind of flip this back. Which guy would you rather have?
I think Edwards has a higher ceiling. And obviously, we didn't see it till like the fourth quarter, but like he made multiple huge catches down the stretch to get them set up for that tying field goal. And then obviously that impressive 32-yard catch where he almost scored in overtime. Look, like Henry Ruggs, I don't think it's happening. I just don't think it's going to happen. Not in this offense. And I understand like Darren Waller is going to see a 30% target share. But for me, like, I think there is a higher ceiling for Edwards. But if you're looking for somebody to, like, feel a little bit comfortable starting for the next couple weeks, I think I would go Pascal. But, like, as a bench stash, Bryan Edwards, like, we know the hype's been there in the offseason, the comparisons. I'm not even going to get into that. But, you saw flashes last night. You really did. I know Hunter Renfrow, like, the Monday night broadcast was like really, really high on Hunter Renfrow. Every time it was third down, Renfrow time. Like, can we relax? Like, it's not like it's Michael Thomas or DeAndre Hopkins. Like, it's third down, you give him the ball. Like, it's Hunter Renfrow. Like, but dude, Edwards,
the entire broadcast. I want to before you get to this, and I'm not trying to cut you off, but like,
no, you're good.
That entire broadcast was really funny. It's like, oh man, there's Sammy Watkins getting involved, and I was like, it was only his second catch. What do you? Like, at the time, we were like, it was the second ball that he caught. And they're like, there goes Sammy Watkins again. And I was like, what do you mean again? Like, it was only the second time he caught the ball. You made it seem like this dude's getting peppered. He's got, like, five receptions right now. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, like, on the same offense, on, like, a third and five where you have one of the three best tight ends in football and a guy that's literally dominated the NFL the last 2.5 years. It was, like, third and five in the first quarter, and Brian Griese goes, third down, it's Renfrow time. Like what are you talking about here?
Now, I will say that the Ravens respected that a good bit. They put Marlon Humphrey on Hunter Renfrow a few different times.
They did.
It was interesting. But getting back to this, so yes, I agree with you. If I'm going to spend the fab, and if you are in a spot where you need somebody to start right now, I agree the move is Pascal. But for me, Bryan Edwards is probably a guy you're picking up for your bench. He's probably a guy you're stashing. And if that's the case, I'm taking the ceiling here, man. Like, I like Bryan Edwards. That is not a shock to anybody. But considering all the different factors of the Raiders' passing attack, I'm with you. I don't think Henry Ruggs is going to be a thing. I didn't think he was going to be a thing last year. I don't think that there was nothing out of week one that says any differently. And yes, like, I talked about this on the Showdown show that David Jones and I do for FTN Daily prior to it, that Marlon Humphrey could be on Ruggs and he was going to be in for a tough game. Even when Ruggs, like, one, yes, he missed a little bit of time. He got banged up during the game. But the other part about this is that Ruggs, and we'll go back to the commentary. There was really good commentary about, like, what Henry Ruggs was doing and what he wasn't doing. And every single time, like, they talk about Ruggs and it's like, he's not separating. His routes are not good. Like, this is not something new, people. Like, he didn't do it at all last year. The guy runs fast, and basically that's about it. So, I'm not in on Henry Ruggs' breakout season, and if I'm going to go with a guy that's going to garner maybe a 20% target share behind Darren Waller, because, hell, somebody's got to catch passes there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Bryan Edwards, man. Like, he played well when they actually gave him targets. I am a little bit, so I pulled up the Raiders schedule. I am a little bit concerned about this. So again, a guy you're stashing more than like leaning on to start because they got the Steelers next. Then they got the Dolphins and then they got the Chargers. The Bears are a good matchup, but then they get the Broncos. The Eagles are a good matchup. Then they get the Chiefs, Bengals, Cowboys. I mean, the Raiders passing schedule is pretty brutal, Adam. Like, the more and more I go down this list, Washington, Kansas City, Cleveland, Denver, the Colts, the Chargers. Like, this is a pretty brutal passing schedule, but if there's a guy that I think can emerge, it's Bryan Edwards, man. Like, I think that you're going to... Am I willing to sit here and spend the fab, like we're talking about, blow the clip on Elijah Mitchell versus 15%, 20%, not even that high, probably, for Bryan Edwards, because, you know, John Gruden hypes up people and people are like, oh, okay, it's just John Gruden. So I much rather just spend the 15% or so to get Bryan Edwards over blowing it on Elijah Mitchell. Staying on the running back position here, I want to talk about Kenneth Gainwell. He is only rostered in 9% of leagues. And this is a guy, like, week one, Adam, we saw Gurner roll. Like, he played over Boston Scott. And Boston Scott throughout the preseason was rumored as the RB2 there. Kenneth Gainwell is garnering a role in week one. People need to pick him up, man. Like, 11 touches, 43 total yards. Doesn't sound amazing, but you're looking at, like, he ran 12 routes versus Miles Sanders 19. We've seen Sanders struggle in the passing game. There was talk about it all throughout the preseason, all about through training camp. I think if Kenny Gainwell, like, hits the ground running, he ran 12 routes versus Sanders 19 in week one. He could eat into that more as the season progresses. And we're not even talking about, like, he's a guy that maybe offers you low-end flex potential on a weekly basis right now. What happens if anything happened to Miles Sanders? So I like him. Again, we're talking about a guy that I think there's a similar path, not say to Elijah Mitchell, but again, talking about not blowing the fab clip in week one, I think there's a lot of other options where you can get similar type of upside from a player and not have to spend so much of your fab to do so. What are your thoughts on Gainwell?
Yeah, I mean, there were so many storylines from week one, but I think this one kind of went under the radar, right? Like, Boston Scott was active in this game, didn't play a snap. And, like, it 100% seemed like he was entrenched as the RB2 behind Miles Sanders, but it was clearly Kenny Gainwell. And, like, they were up 32-6, but I was looking, like, only three of his carries came on that, like, final drive where they were just running the clock out. So he was still pretty involved, like, prior to that game, you know, being really, really just decided. So, yeah, like, he needs to be added, especially in PPR leagues. I, like, again, he was my fourth favorite running back in this class outside of ETN, Najee Harris, and Javonte Williams. I think he's an incredible pass catcher. And if something happens to some of the receivers, like, they can line him up out wide. He played out wide against corners at Memphis. Like, he can play that role. So Yeah, I was really impressed by the fact that Gainwell played as much as he did. And I was, and honestly, I was happy about it because I loved him coming out of Memphis.
Well, the other thing, can we talk about this for a second, Adam? And we discussed this a lot this offseason. I kept talking about it, man. I'm not saying the Philly defense is going to be good. I think this Philly offense is going to surprise people on how good they are. Scheme was good in week one. Yes, I understand everybody talking about, okay, it's Atlanta and stuff. The other parts and pieces we got to discuss there is that, like, they schemed up, like, easy throws for Jalen Hurts. Devonta Smith looked like he is going to be that dude. The pace, I'm going to be curious when the numbers, like, get solved and I'm going through all the things that I do for week to week, game by game over for the DFS article, where the pace set for Philly. They look like they were up-tempo, and Atlanta's run defense is good, and Philly ran the ball well. So I think that you're going to be garnering
their line. Their line
was
so good. And this is the thing, right? They obviously were a mess last year. Everybody was banged up. But you have Brandon Brooks, who's an elite guard. You have Kelce, who's still an elite center. And then, dude, they just paid Jordan Mailata, and he was unbelievable in this game. So
played really well. He's blown people off the damn ball.
Yeah, I mean that screen touchdown. Like they're not going to be like Cleveland, but they could be top five again if that happens. I mean, like they have the players. It's just, are they going to stay healthy? Because they're obviously older, right? Lane Johnson, Kelce, Brandon Brooks are all up there in age, and they've missed time. So if they can stay healthy, though, like it's going to be massive for not just obviously Sanders and Gainwell, but Jalen Hurts, who's off to a pretty awesome start. He looked great.
You love to see it. You love to see good players playing well. It's crazy, man. It's like somebody was echoing or talking about that the entire freaking offseason, except nobody wanted to listen.
Speaking of good players playing well, did you see who scored a touchdown for the Jaguars on Sunday?
Yes, I did. Garbage time,
ultimate,
baby.
I was going to say in the ultimate garbage time, but we take it.
We take it. It still counts. We take them points, baby. Staying on the running back position, got to talk about Tony Jones here. He's only rostered in 9% of Yahoo leagues. And look at Tony Jones. I mean, look, the Saints relied on their backfield a ton in this game. Dude, Alvin Kamara got 20 freaking carries in this game.
Dude, he has 20 carries now in three of his last four games dating back to the end of last season. So starting to see a trend. Now, that game was the surprise game of the week where they beat Green Bay by 62. But if there's games where they're behind, well, hopefully Kamara gets, you know, 6-7 catches. But yeah, I mean, we're starting to see some more 20 carry games from Alvin Kamara, which is just fun.
It's nice. It raises the floor and ceiling, and I think it's obviously his pass game role is going to be fine. But Tony Jones, he's going to have weekly flex viability, very similar to Kenny Gainwell, kind of like we're talking about. Really, really good offensive line. I mean, the schedule is not fantastic, but it's not terrible. Carolina, New England, the Giants, Washington, then they get Seattle and Tampa. It's not good by any stretch, but for a guy that's one step away from taking over an entire backfield a la Latavius Murray beforehand, behind a top 3, top 5 offensive line in the NFL, yeah, again, I'm willing to sit here and throw like a cheap fab bit out there to get Tony Jones overspending up. It's really just kind of a lot of the theme of this week, man.
I mean, I would definitely rather try to get Tony Jones for less than Elijah Mitchell. Tony Jones is literally the same role as Latavius Murray last year, but a better player at this point. Like Tony Jones ran hard in that. Like I watched a lot of his run. Like he looked really explosive. So yeah, like Tony Jones, like, should have been added this time last week, probably, but he still hasn't obviously been added in every league. So make sure he's still not out there. And I'll add that same concept. Like Tyson Williams is like 80% roster. Just make sure somehow in your league. Yeah. Not going to go into that, but yeah.
I want to throw this in there. Would you pick up Latavius Murray if he was out there? My answer is no.
I would.
You would pick him up?
They went to him down the stretch. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Maybe that's a little bit of bias. Like, my whole thing about Latavius Murray...
I mean, he didn't look great. He definitely didn't look great.
That's it. And that's my problem, is that if Le'Veon Bell gets his legs under him, consider... Dude, like, I'm sitting here watching Latavius Murray, and again, we're going back to the commentary from Monday night, and they're like, oh, Latavius Murray, like, he's a good back. And I was like, and that was a good run. And I'm like, what did he do on that run that was supposed to be impressive? I'm not seeing it. Latavius Murray was out there running. I'm not trying to hate on Latavius Murray. I like Latavius Murray as a player. I've liked him as a player for multiple different seasons, okay? But considering what he's done and the effectiveness he showed on a per-carry basis last season in yards after contact per attempt, and what I saw with my eyes last night, he looked like 2019, 2020 Todd Gurley out there, dude. Like, it wasn't impressive. He didn't look like he had any of the explosiveness he used to have. It was, I'm going to run straight, try to run over people. And yes, is he big enough to do that in some instances? Sure. But the guy had 10 carries and he ran for 28 freaking yards. Like, it's not good, people. So I'm not willing to go with Latavius Murray because, honestly, I don't think he's effective enough to hold that job. Like, if Le'Veon Bell's got anything at all left in the tank, I think that he could come up and snatch that job from Latavius Murray. So I'm not willing to sit here and blow the fab on him. If you can get him for, like, literally just a dollar or something, if he's out there, that's fine. Again, this is not me hating on Latavius Murray. It's just I don't see the path where he continues to hold relevancy for the entire season. Let's flip this over, man. Well, you know, let's hit this last running back. Now that I'm going down this list some
this
more.
This is quick, too.
Yeah, and you got Gio on here. 27% roster to Yahoo. Tell me why.
Did you watch Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette try to hold on to the football?
Yep, I did. My DFS lineups and showdown were lamenting. Look,
can I say something, by the way? Ronald Jones... We make jokes. He fumbles and we're like, oh, Ronald Jones is done. He's never playing again. And he didn't play after that fumble, I don't believe. But for me, the Ronald Jones fumble was more of a great play by DeMarcus Lawrence, who's an all-world defensive end. Leonard Fournette dropped the ball in his hands on a pass and it led to an interception. That turnover is far worse. Far worse, in my opinion. And Leonard Fournette comes right back in the game. So, but at the end of the day, the point remains. Once again, Fournette and Ronald Jones struggled with, you know, efficiencies as pass catchers, holding onto the football. Giovanni Bernard, there's obvious James White comparisons, but he was the guy down the stretch in the two-minute drill. After that game, it's just keep an eye on it. Obviously, like, he's clearly their best option in two-minute drills and passing downs on a team that's going to throw a lot. And again, I don't know how comfortable you're going to feel starting Gio Bernard unless Fournette or Rojo were out, but... He's a nice player to have on your bench in PPR leagues.
I think in PPR formats, I would consider it. The other thing about it is if he's going to be the guy running all the routes and stuff, if we, and I don't think it's going to be this week because it's Tampa Bay going against Captain Shitpants, but I think that games where you're talking about high totals, close spreads, we're going to see a lot of back and forth. Do we see Gio involved even more in those instances? Yes. I mean... For the really bad and you know, shirt tail comparison, is he going to be Tampa's James White and we're going to get good usable weeks out of him, especially in PPR leagues? I think it's definitely viable, man. So as an end of the bench stash, a guy that you're throwing as a desperation flex, especially when bye weeks hit, I don't hate the pickup of Gio Bernard. Moving over to wide receivers, man, I am going to let you lead this off with one of the guys we've been talking about all offseason. And that's Rondale Moore, dude. Like, tell me what your thoughts are for him. I talked about him before the week, and I talked about the uncertainty about his snaps versus Christian Kirk's. Why are you going to sit here and throw the fab at Rondale Moore?
Yeah, so his snaps were well behind Christian Kirk's and AJ Green's, but, like, I just think it's only a matter of time before Rondale Moore's an every down player for this team. You saw what... Mm-hmm. Again, we saw in the preseason how they're going to use him, and then we see it right away in week one where you look at his numbers. He gets three screens, catches all of them for 50 yards, had 63 yards after the catch on those screens. Like, he showed that on, I think it was a 30-yard catch and run. Like, he's such a good fit in this offense, and I just think, yes, AJ Green is going to play snaps for now, but at some point, and probably very soon, Rondale Moore is going to be an every down player, and in what looks like an electric offense, Kyler Murray still in this offense, they're still going to utilize the screen game a lot. he's always going to have single coverage going against going on the opposite side or whatever of DeAndre Hopkins. So he is like the ideal stash, because I think by like week 4 or 5, he's going to be in there at least in 3 wide sets, which obviously the Cardinals are going to run 3 and 4 wide sets as much as anybody in football. So
I like the Rondale Moore call. If you look at their usage and how they deployed their wide receivers, yeah, like you're talking about Hopkins and A.J. Green with the primary outside wide receivers, and Rondale and Christian Kirk split the slot time. Now, the thing that's really interesting, and yes, Kirk played more. He ran more routes than Rondale. Rondale was the fourth guy, no doubt about that. The interesting thing about it, though, Adam, is that when Rondale was on the freaking field, he got targets, man. The dude only ran 14 routes, and he was targeted 5 times. Now, if A.J. Green pops up with an injury, just continues to look like he's dust, because that's, again, what we saw in week 1. I mean, his yards per route run was below 1. It was terrible last year. That's continued into this year. And if we see that, there's a lot of outs for Rondale Moore. Like, Christian Kirk not being good, A.J. Green still being dust, Rondale Moore just being that damn good, and they're like, we need to feature this kid more. There are a lot of outs for Rondale Moore. Much less, we're not even talking about, they're going to run a lot of 4 wide. I just think that it's really telling when a guy runs 14 routes and he gets 5 targets. That means that, yes, like you're talking about, they're screening, they're scheming up plays for this guy when he is on the field. And if he shows out, I mean, don't we talk about this every single week, Adam? Like, players that get limited opportunities, if they show out and they play well, do they earn more opportunities? That was always the bull case for Rondale Moore. Not that he was going to walk into week 1 and be 100% snap player and totally dust everybody else. It was that talent wins out. This is going to be a really high volume passing attack, fast pace. And Rondale Moore, I think, is going to be essential to what they want to do in their passing game scheme. Staying on wide receivers, I'm going to continue talking about him. I've talked about him all offseason. I'm going to continue to talk about him because people still are not giving and putting respect on this man's name. Terrace Marshall is still only rostered in 20% of Yahoo leagues. I don't understand it. I don't get it. He's a starting wide receiver in the NFL on a team that is going to throw a good bit. Sam Darnold, I thought, looked good in week 1. That's not a sentence that I thought I would ever say if you were to go back and ask me last year. But Sam Darnold looked good, man. Like, this scheme and this passing attack, and Terrace Marshall being a big slot wide receiver in this offense, I think he's going to garner red zone volume, target volume, and easy completions from Sam Darnold. The schedule is not fantastic, but I think it's good to where if you're looking for a flex, you're looking for a wide receiver 3, if you're starting 3 wide receivers in your league, they got New Orleans, who allowed the 11th most slot yards to wide receivers per game last year.
By the way, Lattimore probably won't play.
Yep. And so we know their corners are already banged up. Bradley Roby, I think, is going to be back. But again, new team, new scheme. I think that he can garner some volume in that game. Then they get Houston, Dallas, Philly, and Minnesota, the Giants. These are all, and some of those teams, the outside corners are really good. Every single one of those teams, you should be targeting in the slot. Like, I'm sorry, like, Dallas is like Jordan Lewis. Yes, he had a good week.
We saw it on Sunday with the Giants. It was Judy. Judy was the guy, yep, before he got hurt. He was on his way.
Darnay Holmes
massive,
is not a good football player, man.
Right, and you have Bradbury on the outside, who emerges a top tier man coverage shutdown corner last year. And Judy was on his way to a 100-yard game. Like, he was at, I think, 76 yards, and then he left. So, like, clearly that's where Denver went. I think that could be where Carolina goes. And by the way, I agree. You want to see them run more 3 wide for Terrace Marshall, but I do agree. He needs to be rostered in more leagues. I will just say this is not completely unrelated because it's the same team. I loved how DJ Moore was used on Sunday.
Yes.
Loved it. He was used in every part of the field. Screens, intermediate, down the field, and he got a 14-yard carry. Love.
Dude. Can we talk about the fact of, like, his usage this year and what we saw in the preseason is what you and I were talking about and forecasting for last year? Like, we're a year early, man. Like, Robbie, yes, he didn't get targets, and that's not what we're talking about here, but it looks like he's going to be used more as the deep threat this year, at least from the sample size that we've seen and the usage of these two players. And again, it's really small. So we're going to see this play out over multiple weeks. Maybe we're wrong here, but everything we've seen in the small tea leaves that we're trying to read here don't say that. Like, it says that DJ Moore is going to be used in the short and intermediate areas of the field. And you and I discussed this walking. I mean, I think we brought this up last week, Adam. It's like people continue to slight DJ Moore because, okay, well, he gets short area targets now. It's like, well, what the hell, man? Like, that's why y'all love Robbie Anderson so damn much. Like, why if DJ Moore is a better guy after the
catch? I was going to say, you cannot gush over DJ Moore's elite yak ability and then complain that he's getting short area targets. You want the ball in his hands.
I don't understand it, man. Closing out the wide receiver position here. Going to bring out Toe Drag. He's again, we're talking about players that are getting disrespected here, Adam. 8% rostered in Yahoo leagues. We discussed this right before we turned on the mic, and you were surprised by this, my friend. Buffalo ran a ton of 10 or 4 wide and 10 personnel last week.
By the way, I wasn't surprised by that. I'm not an idiot.
No.
I know. I'm just.
That's not your surprise. What did surprise you is Gabriel Davis's slot rate, which I think a lot of people would be surprised by. Dude was in the slot 73%. That is fantastic. We know this team is going to run a bunch of four wide. So I think that, like, we're talking about all these different, like, Rondell Moore, similar case for Gabriel Davis. If you're talking about, like, Manny Sanders has been dealing with a foot injury since the preseason. He was questionable to even play. At his age and things like that, like, foot injuries are not good, and they don't go away quickly. If he misses any time, Gabriel Davis is going to be starting in 3 wide sets. We've seen him garner and be the deep role. Hell, if Cole Beasley were to miss time, Gabriel Davis right now is being used as a big slot wide receiver. We talked about this in the offseason. That's exactly what we want in this offense, Adam. Like, so if you can get Gabe Davis for $1, $2 a fab, and nobody else is going to bid on him, is he a guy that I'm saying, okay, you need to start him now, you're going to be starting him every single week? No, that's not what I'm saying. But if we're going for upside stashes in a offense that maybe people are going to overweight week one, and they're going to say, oh, well, what about the Bills' passing attack? We were so high on it. Should you worry about it? Blah, 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 blah. I'm not scenario pressing the panic button. And for Gabe Davis, the upcoming matchups that he has, or this Bills passing attack has, the Dolphins, Washington, which we just saw Keenan Allen destroy Daryl Roberts in the slot. Then they got Houston, Kansas City, and Tennessee. And Elijah Molden on Tennessee allowed a 66.7 catch rate and a touchdown via the slot in week one. These are good matchups, and if anything happens to Manny, he's going to have a role in 3 wide sets. Anything happens to Cole Beasley, we saw it last year. He played big slot. Go pick up Gabe Davis and stash him now. Because if you're waiting, you're not going to be able to get him in the weeks to come, Adam.
Yeah, and he scored again in week one. Another end zone target. I understand Beasley and Diggs are going to be the first two targets in this offense, most likely, but Davis has a role, and like you said, he has passed to getting downfield targets, end zone targets, and if he's like that, slot usage is very, very encouraging. So yeah, I mean, you're not gonna need me to talk more highly about Gabriel Davis than I already have over the past year.
I mean, you're wearing the Bills shirt right now, so I mean the people wouldn't be surprised by the takes anyway. Give me your take on this last team or this last pickup here. You have the Cleveland Browns sit here on the outline, 68% rostered in Yahoo. I know that if they're out there, we're picking them up. Tell me why.
Yeah, it's just kind of simple, right? A lot of people might have dropped them ahead of a matchup with the Chiefs. And if they're out there, they have Houston this week. Newsflash, Houston's not scoring 37 points again, maybe ever. Then they have Chicago, which... I mean, I hope Justin Fields is starting by then, but still, it's a good matchup for Cleveland, who has a really good defense. And then Minnesota, which isn't a great matchup. It's not terrible, but especially for this week, like if they're out there, start them. They're a top 3 defense, and they'll probably have a ton of production. So just make sure if you need a defense that they're not sitting out there.
I absolutely agree. I mean, we've talked all season. The Cleveland Browns are going to be a good defense this year. Their run defense showed out in week one. Corners got tested, but I mean, you play the Chiefs. What you expect, man? Like, I mean, Mahomes is going to Mahomes. All right, everyone. So walking into this Q&A, again, if you're watching this live, get your questions in here. We're going to answer these live. Players, pickups, how to approach waiver wires into week two. First one here, Adam. Second in waivers, if I don't get Elijah Mitchell, I'm looking at Gronk, or do I go Gainwell? They have Mark Andrews at tight end. For me, I think you go Gainwell. Am I wrong?
I think I agree. I will say I was like insanely encouraged by how much Gronk played. Okay. But I just don't think, like, better days are ahead for Mark Andrews. It was also a game where 4th-and-1, Tyson Williams breaks a 35-yard touchdown run, takes away possessions from Lamar Jackson, and then Latavius gets an 8-yard touchdown run late in the game. So Lamar didn't have as many opportunities to throw in the red zone as he probably would have. So I'm not overreacting to Mark Andrews. But if you can somehow, I mean, Gronk won't be there for your, you know, somebody's picking Gronk up. But I would probably go Gainwell just because I don't think Gronk's going to be better than Andrews the rest of the season. So,
no, I agree. And my whole thing is that, like, if you have Mark Andrews, I'm not willing to sit here and take it off of the shelf. Like, you paid up in drafts for him. I'm not willing to move off of that bet. Like, Gronk, I like him. And yes, the usage was fantastic. This is also week one. And I think the other thing about it we need to understand with these veteran players and stuff, it's week one. This is the healthiest they might be for the entire season, the freshest they might be for the entire season. Considering, like, if O.J. Howard rounds into form, Cameron Brate, these other players can factor in for Tampa, are we going to see Rob Gronkowski the entire season playing 80-90% snaps, running routes on every single passing down? I don't think so. I lean that, like, this eats into more being a committee and not to maybe the extent of last year. But again, I don't know if Rob Gronkowski is going to be this guy that is going to be running and playing all the snaps for the entirety of the season. So I feel like going with Gronk, and I loved his usage. We talked about this over at FTN Daily and people approaching the showdown slate. I kept telling people, I was like, Gronk is scoring in this game. Gronk's going to be used a ton in this game. He's going to be featured. But looking after the entire season outlook, especially when you have Mark Andrews, give me the upside that Kenny Gainwell could provide possibly for your fantasy team over, do I start Gronk? Do I start Andrews on a weekly basis? Like, if Miles Sanders, anything happens to him, you're going to be glad you had Kenny Gainwell and you had the upside that that would provide your team versus saying, well, what two out of these two top 12 options at tight end do I start on this weekly basis? No, I say you pick up Kenny Gainwell here. And again, you're probably going to spend less fab going with Gainwell than you probably would trying to sit here and attack Gronk on the waiver wire for a guy that you've already got Andrews. Just start Andrews. All right, next question here. Okay, we already talked about Jeff Wilson. Rolling through these. Would you drop Deshaun Watson or hold on to him? It's a keepers redraft league where we start two quarterbacks. For me, that kind of depends on what kind of bench room you have. I get it's a keeper league, and I understand that, and I think Deshaun's going to come back. I don't think we see him this year. We've been talking about that all season. But do we see him next season? My whole problem with it is I'm not willing, and I get it's keeper. I'm not, if you do not have a crazy deep bench, I don't want to sound like I'm talking on both sides of my mouth here, Adam, but like, every time you drop a player, it always depends on who you're picking up as well. So the other part of this question that we don't have here is that if you're going to drop Watson, who are you considering picking him up or who you're going to pick up over him? For me, if you are going to be in contention, maybe you don't drop Watson week one. But if I get towards them, if I'm start, you start out 4-1, 5-0, 6-0, 5-1. Am I considering dropping Watson and saying, the hell with this, man? Like, if I got a chance in a squad to go for a title, I'm not going to hold on to a guy, even in a keeper league. you don't get title shots every single year, Adam. So if you got the squad, I probably don't drop Watson this week, but I'm considering it starting week two.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. It's a tough situation, obviously, but I like, again, like if you aren't picking somebody up that is like a massive, and it's week one, so like there's probably going to be better players to pick up in the weeks to come. So I'd probably just hold tight, honestly, at this point.
I mean, am I wrong that like this doesn't feel like one of those waiver wire weeks where we're blowing the clip or we're like just freaking out? Like there's the guys that like you have to go just like spend all the fab for. Like, I like this waiver wire week. I don't love it.
I think it's good. Like, it's not great. It's good.
But I'm not like, I don't think it's a week where you spend aggressively. Like there's like that one guy where you're like, all right, 50%, let's go. Like I need him on the squad. I don't feel like there's a player out there where that's the case, at least right now. All right, so next one here, not so much waiver wires, but players that maybe, like, if Sherfield's out there in deeper leagues, like, what are your thoughts on Brandon Ayuk? Because, Lord help me, we talked about the running back group, the wide receiver usage, man. Like, I don't want to say, and I was a massive Dante Pettis guy. I will own that. I'm not going to say I'm getting Dante Pettis vibes out of this right now. But, I mean, how much of the red flags raised for you with Brandon Ayuk right now?
So, Joe Metz and I talked about this on the recap episode on Monday. I had concerns about Brandon Ayuk coming into the season, but it was strictly ADP and volume in the offense. But, like, I'm kind of concerned. I know he missed 10 days of practice or whatever with the hamstring. I would be less concerned if that's all Kyle Shanahan said about why he didn't play a lot. It's just, yeah, he wasn't 100% coming back from the hamstring. We wanted to limit him and make sure he's good to go. Okay, fine. But the fact that he talked up Trent Sherfield and said he was kind of playing better than Ayuk, and then there's reports that Ayuk isn't quite where they expect him to be in terms of, I think there was a report from one of the San Francisco beat writers saying like he's not a professional at this point. Like, so I'm kind of alarmed. Like, I'm not like, and it's tough for me because, like, I wasn't, you know, like, I don't think I have Brandon Ayuk in any teams just because I didn't love his ADP. So it's like, but, like, if I would be a little alarmed. And, we'll, like, this could be a situation where easily by week three he's playing 100% of the snaps. But, like, for me, it's also the fact that George Kittle is healthy. Deebo Samuel is healthy, and he was used downfield in that last game, which we never see from him. So, yeah, I'm definitely pretty concerned.
I'm concerned too, man, and I'm not going to say, like, again, I'm not getting full, the spider sense is not going off to the level of Dante Pettis, but I can definitely tell you the Shanahan doghouse is real.
Yeah, like, you can't look at the situation and just kind of say, okay, whatever, it's week one. Like, this is a situation.
You can't outright dismiss it.
No. Right, we have situations in week one where it's, okay, it's week one, push it to the side, we'll see what happens. There's plenty of those situations. I don't think this is one of them. I think this is legitimate, like, something we need to be very mindful of.
Agreed. Like, I think that this is something that you watch. There's no way that you could start. I mean, and this needs to be said. I know it sounds like it's obvious. There's no way that you can start Brandon Ayuk right now. Like, with any type of confidence, you have to sit here and put him on the bench right now. I am not a until we see it guy. I am not one of these people that's like, well, I need to see it first and then I'm in.
Yeah, there's, like, a difference between needing to see it when they're on the field, and a difference between and there's a difference between that and we need to literally see him on the field.
Yeah, agreed. So I know it might sound crazy, but like, walking into next week, would I be considering Brandon Ayuk or Zach Pascal getting started, or Bryan Edwards? I would be starting possibly one of them over Brandon Ayuk, and this is not a knee jerk, but like, if he's not healthy and San Francisco is telling us all these things and they're like, well, I mean, the guy's playing better, you have to consider that. And the floor for somebody like Ayuk right now of not seeing snaps, not running routes versus players where you're like, well, I mean, but I drafted him in the sixth round. I have to play him at this point, right? No. All of that stuff goes out the window. Like, it goes out the window, and you need to be adjusting on a week-by-week basis about what you're doing for your starting roster. All right, so next pickup for waivers. Would you be comfortable dropping Mecole Hardman or Ruggs for Tim Patrick? For me, I'd be dropping Ruggs.
Without even hesitation. I wouldn't even hesitate. And honestly, even if you didn't have Ruggs and you can only drop Hardman, I think I would do it.
Yeah, and I'm pulling up the routes and stuff like that. I just
don't think it's going to happen for either player.
Well, all right. So I'm going to give you a little bit of encouraging news here, okay, Adam? Looking at routes run for Kansas City last week, I think it's definitively Ruggs that you drop, and it's not Hardman.
Tyreek Hill ran 38 routes.
Yeah. But like anybody that's debating this, because they'll look at the box scores and say, well, Hardman only got 3 targets. I mean, was he out there? Was he playing and stuff? If you look at the tea leaves and you look at through all these stuff, like the snaps played, routes run. Tyreek Hill ran 38 routes. Mecole was out there for 34 routes. Played in the slot, played out wide. The person that split time with Byron Pringle was not Mecole Hardman. It was DeMarcus Robinson. So yes, I know we got a 1-game sample, but I'm with you. If people need to understand, like, to dive through this a little bit further, and they're saying, okay, what about the box scores? Okay, we each guy got about the same amount of targets, same amount of yards. Like, I think it's definitively that you drop Henry Ruggs. Absolutely with you on this one.
Yeah.
All right, last roster spot. Who would you have on your squad? MVS, Cole Beasley, or Tim Patrick? Adam, who are you going with?
Beasley.
Same. I think it's Beasley, especially in PPR leagues. He's the guy that we know is going to get consistent volume, top 3, top 5 passing rate. And I like MVS, but Packers looked like they were terrible. I mean, there's no sugarcoating. They were absolutely terrible.
Dude, imagine if Rodgers and the Packers were on the main slate this week because they're pissed off and they're at home against Detroit. Like, Adams and Rodgers might, like, break records, honestly. Like, but yeah, this is easily Cole Beasley for me. Patrick, I like, but it's like Judy will be back and you're not as comfortable with Patrick with Judy back. Beasley, you're comfortable as a low end wide receiver 3 or flex in PPR no matter what. So,
all right, so Marquez Callaway, what's your thoughts on him? I know we all talked about it, and I can't wait until the Shadow Index, the tool over at FTN Daily, gets updated. Because all I heard through the entire season or the entire walkthrough to week one was, oh, well, Jair, there's no way. You have to believe in Callaway. And I was like, not this guy. I'm not doing it. I'm not eating that chalk. I'm not starting him. I had him ranked outside the top 50 wide receivers. And you can go check the ranks at FTN Fantasy. Had him at wide receiver 55 or 57 off the top of my head. I was not in on playing Marquez Callaway in week one. What are your thoughts on him moving forward? And if anybody drops him, would you be picking him up? I think you pick him up. I don't know about the outlook, though, man. Like, what do you think?
I would absolutely pick him up. The thing is, like, first of all, that game script was wild. Like, it sucks that he didn't get one of the five touchdowns Jameis threw on his 25, 26 pass attempts. But, like, there's going to be, like, entering the season, and you're a Saints fan, so I think you can agree, nobody thought the Saints would be a bad team, but nobody expected them to also be beating Green Bay 38-3 in week one. So there's going to be games where Jameis has to throw 35 to 40 times and Callaway is going to be an every down player and they want to throw deep. They just kind of didn't have to do anything. Like, the deep ball went to Deontay Harris in this game. I'm still not as comfortable starting him as a lot of others may seem to be. But yeah, like, if he's dropped, I put him ahead of Tim Patrick. I put him ahead of, you know, Terrace Marshall, Gabriel. Like, I put him ahead of those guys if he's dropped.
So I'm looking at the schedule for Marquez Callaway.
I think they have Carolina this week, right?
They do have Carolina this week, but looking at the weeks ahead, man, I've got some more concerns about Marquez Callaway than maybe other people do. Here's the Saints schedule after the Panthers. They get the Patriots. They get the Giants. And we know, and yes, people, James Bradbury will shadow. Then they get Washington, who we know William Jackson will do the same thing. Then they get Seattle. Then they get Tampa. You don't have a good matchup until, shoot, man. Like, what is this, week 6, week 7-ish? Like, they get the Falcons, and then the Titans and Eagles. So I mean, look, these next few matchups coming up for Marquez Callaway, I don't know if he's going to be in startable territory, but is he a guy that you need to be holding on considering that next stretch of matchups? Like, there's three or four games that are after that, and you might not have the bench space. You might not be able to hold him for that long, but I think he's a hold. I think he's a pickup if somebody drops him. But these next few weeks, it's going to be dicey about starting him. Adam, I'm going to throw this in here. It's not on waiver wire, but let's just say I'm playing to the crowd and to the fam here. How do you feel about Motor? I love that you just you went silent. You couldn't even...
I mean, did you see what Sean McDermott said when they asked him why Zach Moss was a healthy scratch?
I did not. Enlighten me.
He just said it was a numbers thing. Like, you can only have so many players active. And he decided that... And maybe it was a situation where the Bills going into it weren't planning on running the ball into the Steelers' front anyway. So, like, why not? Why have another running back active? But Breida was active. And I know he plays special teams and stuff like that and can be a factor in the passing game. But I don't know. I just Singletary, if Moss is a healthy scratch again next week, Singletary is like a low-end RB2, decent flex. He looked okay. He didn't look great, but the Bills offense is out of sync. But just in general, like,
Steelers,
yeah.
Man.
But just in general, like, clearly he's ahead of Zach Moss. Like,
I mean, look, we talked about the value that Devin Singletary represented all throughout draft season, man. Like, people just, it's weird. It's kind of like Zach Moss is not that good. I don't know where you would have heard that before. It's kind of strange. Or that Devin Singletary is.
Yeah, I don't think Zach Moss is. I don't think it's that Zach Moss isn't good. I just think it's Singletary's better. Like I've been saying for like 7 months now, I just think it's Singletary's better at football than people think. And agreed. The Bills have talked him up. He had a really good offseason in training camp where he put on, he looked faster, which was a knock on him coming out of college, and a little bit stronger. And we saw it in the preseason. He was like, and again, it's the preseason, but he was like one of the most productive running backs in the preseason outside of Ramondre Stevenson. So maybe the Bills are just saying, you know what? He gives us a better chance at running back right now. He looks better. And it'll be very telling to see if Zach Moss is a healthy scratch again in week two.
It will be, man. And I like Devin Singletary. If people are still willing to hate on that man because of workout metrics, like, got to improve the process. This next one here. Went zero RB. Gaskin is my RB1. What percent of fab do I bid on Elijah? Rest of the team is kind of stacked. I think so. With this is one of those instances where if you're going to bid aggressively on Elijah Mitchell, I think you do it. But I would also, there's a caveat in here. There's a cap to that. And all of these other running backs, so if you got a zero RB team, you're obviously willing to play the variance and you're willing to play the uncertainty of what happens in these backfields. So there's two definitive paths I think you can go with this. You cap your exposure or your fab bid on Elijah Mitchell. If you want to go aggressively, say bid 30% on it, I wouldn't go higher than that. And then I would toss out a net of low bids on Kenny Gainwell, Tony Jones, these other backup running backs that have a path. Adam, any other way that you'd be approaching this?
No, I 100% agree. And I'll say if you're looking for an exact percentage, I would go 30 to 35% probably on Elijah Mitchell. Yep. Closer to probably 35 in this situation, but just in general, probably around 30 would be the cap. But I'm fine with coming up to 35 in this situation.
Well, considering you got a zero RB team, the other thing I'll say too is if you go 30 to 35% on it, throw the dollar bid also on Jamichael Hasty. If you're willing to embrace the variance, which apparently, I mean, you are willing to do, then embrace it again with the backfield for San Francisco. So toss out the net. Again, if we're talking about this, like we talked about this in best ball season, Michael Carter, Ty Johnson, if you're tossing multiple different, if you're throwing your hat in the ring on the backfield, you could do it both times with Elijah Mitchell and Jamichael Hasty. And if you got a deep enough bench, if this is a true RBBC and both these guys have roles, then you might be starting them on various different weeks Thoughts on, this is a good one. Thoughts on Cole Kmet or Juwan Johnson? I feel like, golly, the listeners just know, man. They know my peeps.
I know Juwan Johnson got the touchdowns, but you have to chase the routes.
Yeah, you got to chase the routes. That's something I want to bring up here. And we didn't mention Juwan Johnson on the waiver wire show, and people could be surprised about that looking at the timelines. But Juwan Johnson didn't run a lot of routes, man. I want to say it was like 5 or 6 routes. He just happened to catch the touchdown. So I would not be breaking the bank for him. I like him. I think he's worth the pickup because he's going to be used in the slot. But Adam Trautman played a lot of snaps here, Adam. Adam Trautman ran the majority of the routes for this team in week one. This is not even a question to me. This is Cole Kmet. This is easily Cole Kmet. I love Cole Kmet, and we saw the path. I'm going to be writing him up over at FTN Fantasy, so look for the article today about Cole Kmet in Dynasty. Dude, this was exactly what you wanted to see if you believed in the path of ascension for Cole Kmet. He played a ton of snaps, ran a ton of routes, and Jimmy Graham was fully put in the coffin, man. Any other qualms or nuggets to add here on this decision?
No.
I mean, do you think Cole Kmet, we're going to lean into the love here a little bit. Do you think he has top 10, top 12 upside rest of season?
If Andy Dalton doesn't get the hell out of the way. No, I think he does regardless. Yeah, I'm just messing around. By the way, I wasn't around my computer or anything during that game on Sunday night, but Justin Fields scoring his first touchdown on primetime, I shed a tear.
We pour one out for Andy Dalton because he's eventually his time is coming. It's past. It's never been. Whatever. However you want to phrase that. It's not Andy Dalton time. All right. Quarterback streamer recommendations. Captain Shitpants looked rough. Sorry, Matt Ryan looked rough behind that line. Signed a Lance GM. Pulling up week two, Adam, any streamer sticking out to you off the top here? Okay.
Kirk Cousins against Arizona, Baker against Houston. I know he didn't throw for any touchdowns. There's a good chance he might not have to throw for any this game, but obviously the matchup's great. Roethlisberger, if he's been dropped, they're at home against Vegas. And then I will add, if you're really, hurting and you're in a really deep league and you're looking, Teddy Bridgewater. He looked pretty good, man. Like, he looked pretty good. I know he's not going to have Judy, but it's Jacksonville, man. Like, they just kept 37 to Houston, who don't have a receiver as good as Tim Patrick on the roster, let alone, Brandon Cooks, obviously, outside of Brandon Cooks. But outside of that, like, Tim Patrick would be the number two there easily. So between Sutton, KJ Hamler, Patrick, and Fant, he has plenty, plus the running backs, he has plenty of enough talent to have a really nice game against Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at this, and I haven't dove into week two yet. What I would say off the top, and it depends on how deep your league is, too. I'd say if Baker's out there, he's in play for Houston. You mentioned Teddy. I'll throw in, if you're in a really deep league, I'll throw in Mac Jones, too.
I knew you were going there, actually.
I like him. I think that there's viability there. And again, this comes down to how deep your league is. Like you mentioned, Cousins, I think all of those are viable. So it depends on what options you have. I'd be fine going with Teddy or Mac Jones there. And depending on if you want to sit here and save the fab or spend up elsewhere, totally fine with any of those thoughts. Question from Randy. What are your thoughts on handcuffing? Have CMC? Is Hubbard a must add in non-PPR? I'm going to say no. Because I think this is one of those situations where we don't know the true cuff. Like, Hubbard played well in preseason, but Royce is there too, man. Like, I don't definitively think it would be just the Chuba Hubbard show.
If this was a month ago, I'd say probably.
Yep.
But.
Yep, agreed.
Royce Freeman is good. So, like, I think. And, like, who did Carolina have after Mike Davis last year? It wasn't anybody as good as Royce Freeman. Nope. So I don't think as a Yeah, and especially a veteran like Mike Davis, you feel a lot better about him carrying the load in absence of Christian McCaffrey than you would. Chuba Hubbard's talented, but still a rookie. You bring in Royce Freeman. So I would agree. I don't think he's a must have.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's more likely one of those situations where in the preseason we thought we knew who the cuff was, and maybe we were all wrong. And again, you hit the nail on the head, Adam. If you would have asked us this question a month ago or during preseason action, I would have told you definitively, yes, pick up Chuba. But Royce being there, it muddies the water, man. I still think that Royce Freeman is a talented running back. I know that he's had problems. I know that he's not shown it on the NFL field consistently enough. I think if he got run as the true three-down guy in Carolina, he could put up Mike Davis type of numbers in Carolina if he were to get all the work. All right, going back to Atlanta, how concerned are we for Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts behind the O-line? The Bucs might eat them alive. They might. They might absolutely eat them alive. That O-line looks bad, man. Like, Calvin Ridley, I think, is going to garner enough target volume. We saw that in week one. If I have either one of them, I'm willing to start them depending on your other options in week two, because I think the volume,
you're not benching Ridley. Who are you playing over Ridley?
No, you're not. But on that subject, if you paid up for Kyle Pitts, are you going to bench him after 1 week? I don't think you do.
Again, like at tight end, maybe you start Gronk over him if you have Gronk on your team. Mm. That I could see. But like Dallas, I know Atlanta and Dallas aren't the same offense. They're not nowhere near as good. The offensive line, even without Zach Martin in that game, not as good. But Dallas, when they had man coverage with Amari on the outside or Gallup, they went right at these corners. So like maybe that's what Atlanta does with Calvin Ridley, who like Ridley's going to be fine. I'm starting Calvin Ridley with maybe not 100% confidence because Tampa Bay is that good on defense, at least up front, but I'm starting him. And Pitts, like, again, Gronk, I would probably start over Pitts if you have him. But other than that, like, are you starting like Cole Kmet over Kyle Pitts? The way they move Kyle Pitts around, I know he and Hayden Hurst played like very similar snaps, but the numbers weren't great, but I was at least kind of.
He had like eight targets though, didn't he? Eight or nine targets.
He and Ridley both had eight, I believe.
It's eight targets. No, I'm not going to be benching Kyle Pitts after 1 week. Looking at their schedule coming up, Adam, after the Buccaneers, they have the Giants, they have the Washington Footballs, they have the Jets, the Dolphins, the Panthers, the Saints, the Cowboys. I mean, these are not. I mean, are the Giants a great matchup on paper? No. Is Washington, especially considering their pass rush, a good matchup? No. But these are teams that, like, where it might look ugly, but I think that you're still starting Ridley. You're not fading him. You're not going to, and this is not just like, oh, I paid up the draft capital in search of studs. This is not that type of conversation. This is, he's still a player that's going to get 8 to 12 targets on a weekly basis. And that, and considering his talent, that's something, man. Like, you can't bench him, and I'm not willing to bench Kyle Pitts at this point. Not after week one. All right, everyone. That is our waiver wire episode before week two. Again, Adam and I are going to be back. We're going to be back tomorrow. Tune in. Turn on the notifications for my Twitter account. We're going to be live. We're going to be discussing four players that you need to be trading, getting on or off of your squads before week two action kicks off. Fade the Chalk Live will be back tomorrow. Thank you for everybody tuning in. All of your questions. Again, Q&A tomorrow on trade questions. We'll be back, people. Everybody have a good day. Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at APPfeiffer24, and at ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.